Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast. Today we've got Dr. Tim Elmore in the studio with us, and calling in we have a close friend of Growing Leaders, Tim Spiker. So Tim, why don't you take just a second, introduce Tim.
Very well, I will. Tim Spiker has been a friend for many years. Tim, I don't know how long we go back. Do you remember what it was? Was it 6 or 7 years maybe?
I think it's at least a decade now.
Okay, there you go. Seems like only six, though. I want you to know that. Anyway, you and I both have been friends really around the passion we both have for leadership and leadership development. How do we really develop healthy, transformative leaders? And you have done a new book called Who, Not What, and I'm very much looking forward to talking about this. But let me just set up what the book says, and then I want to kind of turn you loose to define it for the listeners, because I think it's something, even something you admit in the book, that this is something you intuitively know, but maybe haven't thought deeply about, and maybe it would explain why so many people fail or at least diminish their potential or reaching their potential on their leadership journey. In the book, you really talk about the fact that 3/4 of your effectiveness as a leader comes from who you are, not what you do. And in a day where we basically make leadership development about behaviors and skills, just do this and you'll be a good leader, just do that and you'll be a good leader, you say, no, you could do those things and still not earn the trust of a follower. So take a minute and give us a broad brushstroke, big picture view of the message of the book.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you've done a great job summarizing it. So a number of years ago, I was involved in some research. I was working with an organization, and we were doing leadership development a week at a time on the west side of Pikes Peak. And we gave our attendees a number of assessments. And we would often get questions about, is there a relationship between personality style, natural abilities, and leadership effectiveness? And so we had enough data to run the numbers, and we were looking for those correlations, and frankly, they just didn't exist, which was an answer that we could share with our clients. But in the midst of doing that research, we accidentally found some other data. When we take a look at the leadership paradigm that we were using, there were 8 different aspects of leadership that we were measuring. And what we accidentally found is that just 2 of those areas were driving, the first pass of the data was just under 70% of the results. In other words, if you were doing really well in these 2 areas, you'd be doing well overall in leadership. And unfortunately, the other direction would be true as well. And those 2 areas, in terms of thinking about them and mulling over them and looking what was in those 2 areas, it became very apparent that, unfortunately, not at the time when the research was done, but to me, years later, that the core of what was driving those 2 key areas was about who you are as a human being. Huh. And so that's where the initial idea around, wait a second, it's great to help people with tactics and practices and skills, but what if the foundation of what causes us to enthusiastically follow somebody is not those things? What if it's something deeper? And all of the anecdotes and stories and research, anything that I've been able to find when I have these conversations with people, I think that we all just kind of walk away like it was right there all along, but somehow we didn't see it.
Yeah. Amazing. In the book and in our conversations over the last several years, you talk about a well-developed who, and there's really 2 components to it. Talk about that for just a minute, because I think that will also ring true for our listeners.
Yes, I can't avoid getting on a soapbox when I answer this question, so I just warn you
okay.
ahead of time. The 2 aspects that make up a well-developed who, the 2 aspects that account for 3/4 of leadership effectiveness are inwardly sound and others focused. And
okay, let's say that again. Yeah. Inwardly sound, so yeah. they're strong, healthy, emotionally functioning, sound, and then others focused. They're looking outward. It's not about them.
Right. So if you combine those 2 things, this is like leadership gold, because yeah. these are the 2 things in combination that cause us to trust somebody. And it's virtually impossible to put a price tag on trust in leadership. Yeah. So Now, I would say inwardly sound and others focused in that order.
Yeah.
Because I found some people who perhaps some folks are familiar with and interested in the writings of Robert Greenleaf, a great writer about leadership, specifically servant leadership, and they'll dive into the idea of wanting to serve others, but they haven't created enough of an internal foundation for themselves.
Yeah.
So it's noble and it's nice, but it ultimately is not very effective because they haven't settled some of those questions internally yet. And the soapbox that I mentioned a second ago is, you know, I think high moral character is, you know, obviously that would be incredibly important in the development of trust with other people. We've got to be leaders of exceptional character. But my pet peeve, to put it mildly, is when authors or speakers or consultants get out there and occasionally say, basically, having good character is all it takes to be a trusted leader. And that's when I want to kind of jump up and down and talk about issues of identity and self-awareness and personal disciplines. And you talk about those things in attitude.
You do
a great job talking about those things. But, yes, high moral character, incredibly important, but not nearly enough to define what it means to be really inwardly sound.
Yeah, it's the truth, but not the whole truth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well stated.
Good. Well, I've always been intrigued with this idea, and I'm so glad that you finally put it into words, and not just words, but written words. Talk real quick about the relationship between the who and the what of leadership, because I think you would say if the who is sound, then what does happen? There is fruit born, results are gotten, products happen with leaders who are strong in the who.
Yes. So there is a relationship. If you know the analogy that I use in the book and use with my clients, folks that I work with, is that of a really strong tree. And of course, any tree we can see above the ground, we see we see the leaves and the branches and the health and the fruit.
Yeah.
But what's driving that, obviously, is the roots below. And so when we draw a line between the who and what of leadership, I would suggest that the who, as we've been talking about, inwardly sound and others focused, is everything that lies below the surface.
Okay.
It's all of the root structure that feeds rest of it. And the what of leadership, things like setting direction, thinking strategically, aligning resources, motivate, inspire, execute and follow through and develop talent, that all of those very important aspects of leadership are fed and given nutrition by the who. So essentially, who is what makes the what matter.
Yeah.
Who is what makes the what effective. So you imagine somebody stepping to the front of the room to do that, and we're going to set some direction. We've got a new project or a new product coming out, whatever the case may be. When that leader begins to cast vision for where this project is going to go, we cannot help but factor into the equation who that individual is as a person when we listen to them. Now, I'm not saying as followers we're necessarily doing the math on a piece of paper as we sit in the room, but I'm going to follow them well or not.
Yeah.
But at sometimes a conscious and always a subconscious level, how much I want to give myself to a project or an effort is directly correlated to the quality of the person that I'm following. And do I readily jump in, both feet, all in, or do I have those questions I have in the back of my mind, not whether or not I'm going to follow them, but what are the motives of this person? Is this really about the organization? Is this really about our mission? Or is this really about this person who's trying to check the next box on their career path?
Right, exactly.
They're just trying. Yeah. And so, frankly, I mean, we're less motivated by the less noble leader. I mean, that's pretty easy for us to feel. And so that's why no matter what aspect of the doing part of leadership, those what aspects that we mentioned a moment ago, all of those are directly connected back to the who of leadership.
Yeah.
Just like in a tree, those branches are connected back down. Sometimes those connections are easier to see. Sometimes they're a little tougher to see, but they're there regardless of what part of the what we're talking about.
Yeah. You know, the phrase that keeps going through my mind is, because you brought up trust, is the phrase, people follow a leader only as closely as they trust him or her. remember John Maxwell, I worked for John for many years, and he used to say people buy into the leader before they buy into the vision. So really, in essence, that's kind of what you're saying. We intuitively look at that person up front giving us the direction, and we're calculating, even if it's subconsciously, how closely we want to follow this guy because of who he is.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that's hard for us to keep in mind is the idea of becoming versus managing. And what I mean by that is when we say, okay, I'm only going to follow this leader as much as I can trust that leader, I think the mistake for us as leaders who want to reach our potential and make positive impact in the world is that we can be very easily tempted into thinking, okay, how can I build trust with the people who are following me? Now, I'm not saying that's a bad question, but I'm saying that there's a better question, and that is, how can I be trustworthy? Mm-hmm. Because we can do team building, we can do all that sort of stuff, which is valuable. I'm not saying that's not valuable. But it's a different question when we begin to look in the mirror and say, what am I doing a little bit every day to become more and more trustworthy? And from my observations and the work that I've done in this research, I would go back to those two things we talked about earlier. If I want to unlock that door, it's about becoming more inwardly sound and becoming more others focused. And so for me, there's a world of difference between trying to kind of manage the external reality of trust and every day becoming a little bit more of a trustworthy person.
Yeah, that's rich. Now, I'm not sure, Tim, if you've already kind of covered some of these, but I know in one of the chapters of your book, you talk about myths and misunderstandings. I'm sure that it's easy to misunderstand and maybe oversimplify what you're saying. Talk about some of the myths that maybe revolve around this idea of who, not what.
Yeah. Well, I've mentioned one of them already, and that is the kind of the misunderstanding that being inwardly sound is strictly about being having good character. Being inwardly sound takes a whole lot more than that, and it's much more difficult than simply being an honest person. I think to point that out, lots of us probably know some folks that we would say are very honest people that we wouldn't follow into a phone booth. And I think that emphasizes that there's just more to becoming inwardly sound than having great character. It's totally necessary, but there's more to it than that.
Right.
Another one that I would touch on, I'm kind of going through the Rolodex of the various things that we talked about in there, is, you know, you work with generations. So there's probably nobody on the planet who's done more spent more time thinking about boomers and Gen X and Gen Y, Gen IY. I mispronounced that. Sorry. You know, when I have worked with baby boomers, you can kind of see in them, I mean, I've listened to the comments about Xers and IYers that they're almost frustrated with the fact of the opportunities that technology and the economy give this group that they didn't necessarily have. Now, they don't say it that way. They'll talk about those groups being less committed and lazy and all kinds of things. And of course, I'm overgeneralizing here a little bit. But what I found with that group is that there's a real temptation to say the world is accepting of this, they'll call it a style of leadership. Style leadership, Tim. Not what it's acceptable now, but it hasn't always been that way. And I think that's a real myth, because I think that the boomer generation, they grew up in a different time. I mean, they had, by definition of their very title, they could get away. The leaders in that space, as boomers were coming up, they could get away with more, because if you don't want to do the job, that's okay. We've got 100 other people who are ready to take this job, because this generation is so large, there's so much talent. And on top of that, we were just coming out. This was the group, the silent generation before them, kind of being in the throes of the Great Depression. There was a value on employment with the boomers that the Xers and the IYers don't necessarily share. And so where all that comes back to is, who, not what, has always been true. I mean, one of the things I say at the beginning of the book, like, this isn't an invention of mine. I'm just talking about this as if we're talking about gravity. Like, this has always been true. And then I will challenge boomers on to say, you know, if you had a choice back then when you were starting to come into the workforce, if you had a choice, all other things being equal, of working for an inwardly sound and others-focused leader or somebody who wasn't those things, would you choose that inwardly sound and others-focused leader?
Yeah.
And you would.
Yeah.
You would. So I understand that the environments, economic conditions, even particular cultures, whether that be you're talking about a particular country or even within an organization, they tolerate and sometimes even celebrate things that are in the opposite direction of who, not what. Yeah. But that doesn't mean who, not what isn't true. That just means that that organization, that culture, that time period tolerates a different type of leadership. And I think with the boomers especially, there was a time when there were so many of them and such a high value on employment that very autocratic, sometimes even abusive leadership was tolerated, sometimes even celebrated. I would say who, not what, was just as alive and well as it is now. It's just the conditions were different.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. In fact, I'm thinking of examples over and over and over how what you just said, tolerated or celebrated, but I think deep down we all knew, I don't want to be like that, or I want to avoid getting burned by that leader, so I dare not get too close. So, So Tim, what I'd like to do is take the remaining minutes we have together on this recording and really talk about what do we do with this? How do we leverage the truth of who, not what? I think everybody listening would say, absolutely. You just put into words what I've felt. But what would you say would be some practical takeaways and applications to this great leadership truth?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we can begin to apply it as followers, which is to say, how do we choose the leaders we're going to follow? I mean, we have probably all run into charismatic leaders or leaders whose resumes look flawless. But are we looking deeper? Are we looking around the corner? Are we looking at who they are as a person? And I think it's tough to do. I'm not saying that in the interviewing process, as you're thinking about taking the job or working for a particular leader, it's not easy to come up with that information because it takes some time to get to know a person. But especially if you're in an organization where you're moving to a new position within the same organization, I think we should be careful not to be seduced by the success of numbers, having achieved particular things. We need to be careful because that leader is not only going to determine, you know, have a huge impact on our quality of life, but ultimately in the long run, and this is all long run stuff. There's lots of ways to lead in the short run that get results.
Sure.
And so this is all long run. In the long run, that well-developed who that you're following is going to be more effective. And so I think one of the first places we can apply it is when we think about who we're going to follow, what job we're going to take or what role we're going to step into. I think another place to apply it is as we are responsible for developing other leaders, what is the nature of the conversations we're having with them? Because if we want to create world-class leaders, we've got to have world-class leadership conversations. And if all we talk about is the what of leadership, all we talk about, then we're missing three quarters of what drives leadership. And so maybe it's a little scary for some to say, well, I'm going to talk with somebody else about how inwardly sound and others focused they are. Yes, yes, exactly. Yes, if you want to create great leaders, you have to have those conversations.
Yeah.
And if you're unwilling or that courage muscle hasn't been developed quite enough yet, and you can get there, but those things have to be a regular part of conversation for the leaders that we are developing.
Tim, let me jump in real quick.
Yeah,
What just raced across my mind in the last moment of you talking was this might just explain the incredible emergence of executive coaches and that whole field, that whole industry. Because I think so many bosses of organizations would say, okay, Tim Spiker, you're right about this who, not what, but I do not have time. I'm not a therapist. I'm, you know, I'm not a shrink. I can't, you know, help these people, these emotional problems they've got. I just got to produce products. I got a bottom line I've got to meet. And so many at all level, many employees say, I've got to find a coach outside of my workplace who's going to walk me down this road and get me into a healthy state. So when I do have influence, or maybe more influence, I'm in a good place to lead. Comment on that. It seems like that would explain that.
Well, certainly, as somebody who works in that world, I have a vested interest in agreeing with that statement. Certainly when we go to do inner work, and, inner work would be some of those things we mentioned earlier in terms of personal identity, self-awareness, high moral character. There is a just small, very side comment here in that even for the most moral of people, it's an enormous mistake to assume that we're at a certain level of morality and that we shouldn't continually evaluate ourselves, because there's a psychological phenomenon called the better than average effect. And we see ourselves, generally speaking, as better than we are.
Yeah,
and it's
a
very natural human tendency. So we got to be careful about just assuming that our morality is where it needs to be. But certainly for many people, to investigate and look at those issues, other issues such as emotional maturity and humility. Some people will just be more comfortable in doing that, not with their boss, not with other people in their organization. It also depends, I think, a little bit on the individuals around you and the organization you're in. There are some cultures and some individuals where, I mean, as a leader, they see that as their job.
Yeah.
Like, my job is to help grow and develop, and so I'm going to ask some of these challenging questions. We're going to have regular conversations about, for example, humility. We're going to have regular conversations about how you're growing and developing. Some people are able to do that. Others, they're not accustomed to that. And so if you find yourself in an environment where that doesn't seem to fit, I mean, the mistake would be to look at your organization, look at the leader you're following, and say, I'm just going to take whatever leader development comes at me, as opposed to choosing the leadership development that you're going to receive. And so, to your point here about the coaching, if you don't experience with your leader or the organization you're working in conversations that are starting to go deeper than just the what of leadership, then you may need to reach out into the world of executive coaching, leadership coaching. There's different terms for it. But that may be a thing that you need to do so that you don't let your own development languish and be held back.
Wow. This is huge. In fact, I think what we're talking about here is the first conversation that needs to have. Another thing I remember learning as I worked under Dr. Maxwell was people do what people see. So I would think if a perhaps not yet healthy, not yet inwardly sound and outwardly focused person comes into a workplace, if they have a supervisor, a direct supervisor that models this, they would have a good running chance of saying, I want to be like that. I'm going to start emulating that, and would eventually become healthy. I think a leader that sees their entire job as building a healthy culture, and let's say that happens, there's even a greater chance then of a person coming in not yet healthy would then begin to be healthy. In other words, you become like who you are around. I'd like you to close out our podcast by just talking about specific steps a person could take if they're in, let's say, a not perfectly healthy organization, because that's probably most. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, most of them are not thriving. Most are not healthy. Most of them don't have bosses that feel like they can afford to have these conversations. Everything's just so bottom line. What would be two or three steps a person could take as they're moving along their leadership journey to become a better who, not what, leader?
Yeah. Well, this is going to sound like a planted commercial, but I promise it's not. I think a real easy step that a lot of people could do would be engage with the First Habitudes book, self-leadership. There is so much good stuff in there, and I really appreciate the various images that you've brought into it, the Growing Leaders has put in front of people. That a text like that is also very interactive. So you're looking at the pictures and you've got some of the exercises to do there. That's a great place to start. If you wanted to amp that up, you'd take a book like that and you'd walk through it with a couple other people.
And
it wouldn't even need to be people that were advanced. You could do that with a couple of peers and say, hey, we kind of want to be the best versions of the leaders that we can be, we need to be talking about this. And if you did nothing more than had a lunch once a month or once every other month, and you talked about a different aspect that's introduced, for example, in self-leadership, the first Habits book, that would be a very easy, very practical, great start. Another possibility would be to find somebody who you look at them and say, hey, this is a leader that I absolutely, implicitly trust. This is an inwardly sound and others-focused leader. Maybe I could ask that person if they would coach me or mentor me. So if you go through the Rolodex in your mind, who are the most inwardly sound and others-focused leaders that you know? And maybe that's a long list, maybe that's just one. But to ask that person to spend some time with you. And then when you engage with them in conversation, don't be afraid to initiate in the direction of who.
Yeah, in the direction
of inwardly sound and others focus, and ask them about how they became who they are, how they grew and developed, and then there's opportunities for us to learn from others.
Well, I would add one more step to what you just said, Tim. I think folks would do well, and many of our listeners are going to want to do this, to grab a copy of this new book you've done, Who Not What, The Hidden Truth About Leadership. I just think it's spot on, and it's the essential first step that I think everybody ought to take. And because we work with young leaders, this is one we're going to be really making known to our constituents, because this is where, if you don't get this right, my goodness, all the gimmicks, all the techniques that you learn about talking well and, you know, trying to get people motivated or manipulated just is going to be short-term at best. Tim, this has been great conversation. Thank you so much for carving out time and spending some time with us. Thanks for the who, not what, big idea that I'm looking forward to exploring even deeper. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim. I really appreciate you having me.
You bet.
Thanks for joining us as Tim Spiker shared more in his upcoming book, Who, Not What, The Hidden Truth About Leadership. To learn more about Tim Spiker and the work his organization does, visit timspiker.com. You'll also find a link to receive more information about the release of his upcoming book. This podcast notes are also going to be released as part of Tim's daily blog. You can visit growingleaders.com to find the notes there. You will also find the link to Tim Spiker's website in those notes. While you're on our website, check out our Habitudes page. Habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. You can learn more about our resources, including Habitudes Book 1, The Art of Self-Leadership. So until next time, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast.